And we're holding at the top of Kuf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. We discussed yesterday a point where a person says that all of his nechassim, that a person writes that all of his nechassim should go to his wife. So we don't mean, we say, it doesn't mean that he means to disinherit his children. It means he wants to make her an aputrupa. He wants to make her a trustee, that that his children should have respect for her. That that she's the one who's going to be deciding what's going to happen with the estate, but not that he actually means to give it all to her outright. And then the Gemara had discussed various other possibilities. What about when it's one son, a younger son, an older son? What about various other relatives, etc.? So we discussed that point, that when do we say that if he's, when do we say that if he's giving all, that if he's say that if he's giving or writing or whatever all of it, then it literally means all of it, and the other ones don't get anything, versus when do we say that he's just making them an apotropos? In addition, also the Rashbam and various other Rishonim discussed the point that a few blot ago we said it is possible for a person to give all of his nechassim to one son. So why all of a sudden are we saying over here that it would only mean making him an apotropos? So we talked about yesterday, there are several different possibilities. There's a difference between writing it and there's a difference between writing it and saying it. Or the difference whether he says there's a difference between Losh and Matana, etc. Various possibilities. Anyway,
with the wife, what's people say? I'm making a bit of what I think Chinese for like.
Because the point is, he wants to say, he wants to make it like as if like you own all the nechassim in order that her children should respect her more. Especially, they may not even be her children; they may be his children from a different wife, for example. But whatever, by saying this loshen, we have an umdana. It's called like we have a reasonable supposition that he didn't actually mean to literally give her all the nechassim and disinherit his children.
On the other hand, does she become one of the Yarshim?
That's what we're going to talk about later on. If he gives her a portion equal to one of the other children, right now we're saying that he gives her all the nechassim. So we're saying he's not actually giving all of it to her. He's just making her an apotropa. And the same thing with all these other cases. But again, so you have several different explanations in Rishonim how it is that this works. What the difference is between this and a previous case where we said that he can in fact give all of it. So one difference is between writing it. One difference is between writing it and saying it. And another difference is another difference is whether he says explicitly or not. If he says explicitly, I'm giving it to her or to him or whatever, not as apotropos, but rather as matana, then it would be valid. Whereas if he didn't say one way or the other, then by default it would mean that he means an apotropos. Okay. So now Bori Rava. So now Rava's question is the Bori Heach. What would be the din as far as a body? Would the same din apply? Now, that's the reason why the Gemara is bringing this whole discussion over here, is because before we had a case on Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph involving where, again, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yechonon ben Broicha had said it's possible to disinherit one son in favor of another. And we said that applies to a Shchivma. Now, the question is, does it apply to a body as well? And the Gemara had discussed that point, so now the Gemara brings other cases where we see a Sutin Din applies to a Shchivmara, and in each one of them, Rava asks, does it apply to a Bori as well? So, Bori Rava, B'Bori Heach. The question would be, B'Shchivmara hu d'nichalei d'l'shtamun mila. You could say when it comes to a Shchivmara, when he says that his wife should have all the property, then again, it means he wants them to have more respect for her, because as long as he, you could say in that case that would only apply avu b'bori. But when it comes to when he himself is healthy, hakoi ihu, he is still alive, they're going to respect her because she's his wife. Not only as a practical matter that because they have derech eretz for him, they're going to have for his wife as well. But even as far as the limud, the Gemara tells us in Ksubas, we learn from Kabed es avicha ve'es imecha, that includes also your father's wife, meaning your stepmother or your stepfather, as the case may be. But the Gemara points out over there, primarily it applies only when the natural parent is still alive. So as long as he's alive, they anyway have the mitzvah mitzad kabed es avicha to honor her. So you could say that maybe only when he's a shchivra and he's concerned, well, they're still going to have that same kind of honor for her after I go, then he makes her an apotropa. So by a body, maybe that wouldn't apply.
That's why it doesn't sound like Moshe Rabbeinu doing Yeshua. You give a speech in front when you need to
visit the scene. Or maybe even by a body. You could say he want mehashta. Maybe even by a body, he would want that they start listening to her even now. He knows that once they know that in the future they're going to be subject to her because she's going to be the apaturpa, so now they'll start developing that sense of respect to her, and maybe therefore would apply to a body as well. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof from a Braisa. A kois of peris nechosav le'ishtoi, if a person writes that the peris of his nechosim are going to go to his wife, now that can be, that Ashbam explains, it can mean either that he has peris right now, or it can mean that he's being makna her a piece of karka insofar as the peris, that he's saying that the karka is going to belong to me, but she's entitled to the payers. Anyway, goivok subosim and a karka lemechtsav l'shlishvul revi. Goivok subosim and a karka. Then she collects all her ksuba from that karka, because in other words, we're not going to say the point is we're not going to say that because he gave her that gift doesn't mean that she's moichel the shibud of her ksuba. Normally, a ksuba has a shibud on karka. So fine, then in that case, when he writes that the peiros of the nechosim go to her, that doesn't mean that she's giving up the shibud on the karka. So therefore, so she'll collect the peiros from this, and in addition, she'll be able to collect the appropriate amount of karka for her ksuba. L'mechtza l'shlish v'l'rvia. On the other hand, if he gave her, that he's giving her the karka and the peiros, which can be entirely, or it can be only half of them, or a third, or a quarter of the peiros, then she can collect her ksubas, then she can collect her ksuba from the rest. So in other words, then from the rest, from other karka that he didn't give her, again, we're not going to say that she was moichel on her shibud. So in other words, even though it wasn't the whole thing, unlike in the first case where it was peiros nechosav, all of them, the second one, he's only saying a half, a third, or a quarter, the same din would apply.
We're not talking about it.
That's what we're going to show. That's what we're going to show on the face of
right
it. We're talking about giving a matana. Yeah.
Right now he's using lashon.
Yeah. The point that Rashbam also explains, you know, normally you should think the other way around. If he gave her a quarter, and all the more so if he gave her a third, and all the more so a half,
that should be hers.
In other words, why is it going in the order lemechtza l'shlish v'l'revia? So it's one of those things, zuv ein sarach lemazu. Needless to say, if he gave her a whole half, but even if he gave her a third, and even if he gave her a quarter, the reason it says it in this way is because that's the usual lashon. Lemechtza l'shlish v'l'revia is the lashon throughout Shas. So therefore, in this braisa also, it gives them in that order. Continues the braisa. Kosov kol nechosov leishtoi. Now, what happens if he writes? Now, Tosfos asks anyway. What's the chiddush in it? I mean, of course, then he hasn't given her something exclusively. He's only giving her a part of the peiros of this karka. Of course, she can collect from other karka. So Tosfos learns that actually what it means is he's giving her the peiros not forever. He's giving her the peiros of a particular field for a couple of years. So now, if he passes away during that time, can't the Yisomim argue, you know what? Look, she has payers from that field for a couple of years. Let her just collect her ksuba exclusively from that, and there's no shibur on the rest of the nechassim.
Even though the ksuba is written down a certain...
If he writes a different field, then obviously they have to respect that. But we're talking about, let's say he didn't. He just said, in general, all my nechassim are under a shibur to the ksuba. So now, can't they say, well, he's satisfied by that shibud by giving her these peiros for a couple of years? No, she's still entitled to collect uksuba from other fields because she wants to collect uksuba right away. When it comes to peiros, she's going to have to wait. She's going to have to wait until the peiros are ready, where she wants uksuba now, we could say. So therefore, so...
We say also that the uksuba is made from when the husband dies? The husband didn't, even though she has...
He took on the shibud from when he was alive. So this is the equivalent of a matnas body. That's what we're dealing with.
So that way we think that this person got her stuff ready, the ksuba ready, let's say if it's her, if the ksuba only starts from when the person dies. So if she was eating peiros until now, it was just peiros that was extra, nothing to do with ksuba.
That's fine, but nonetheless, especially we're talking about over here that he gave her that he gave her X number of peiros, you would think the Yisomim could say, well, then you have what to collect your ksuba from. You don't need anything from us. And we're saying that no, it's not so. So Cost of kol nechosav leishto. He continues the Braisa. What happens if he wrote out that all of his nechosim go to his wife? The yotza all of shtar choiv. And afterwards, there comes out a shtar choiv that he owes somebody else money, which came before that matana. So now the order was the ksuba. First came the ksuba when he married her. Then came the shtar choiv. Eventually, he borrowed money, and there's a shtar choiv. And now, finally, came this matana. So now, in other words, the point is that that shtar choiv can't override. So the question is, what does it override? Does it override the matana, or does it override the ksuba? Rabbi Eliezer Omer tikra matanasa v'tamad aksubasa. So Rabbi Eliezer says, what we should do is rip up the matana, and she'll retain her rights to her ksuba. Because why would he write this matana? He wants to be able to improve her position. It doesn't mean that she's moichel the shibud on her ksuba. So what happens then? So we take away this matana, then it means that now if the Baal Choyv comes and collects the property, she's going to say, fine, but I have a prior shibud for my ksuba, so I'm going to be able to take it away from you. So therefore, she would prefer to not have the matana take effect, because if she has the matana take effect, that's how she's going to collect her ksuba, well, then we have a problem. The Baal Choyv has a prior shibud. The Chachamim say that actually what happens is, now she rips her ksuba. Rashbam says doesn't literally mean she rips up her ksuba. It doesn't mean she's moichel her ksuba altogether just because her husband is going to give her a present. It means that if he buys any nechosim later on in the marriage, she'll be able to collect from them. In other words, all the nechosim up until now are under the shibud to the Baal Choyv. If later on he buys nechosim, they're not included in the shibud to the Baal Choyv, but they're still going to be included in the shibud to the ksuba. Because everything that he has is meshubah to the ksuba. So therefore, so Nacham said, as Rashbam says, when he says tikra matnasa, doesn't literally mean that she rips up her ksuba. Just means her ksuba is not going to be effective as far as collecting from any of the property until now. Because what's going to happen? Because that got overridden by the matana, basically. Now the Baal Choyv is gonna get hit. For Vitamid Amatnasa, now the Matana will still be in effect, but the Matana in the end doesn't end up working because you have a shibud to the Baal Choyv ahead of it. Therefore, Vinimtas Karachas Mikan Mikan, so she winds up, as the saying goes, bowled from both sides. In other words, she can't collect either one. She's not gonna be able to collect, she's not gonna be able to collect. From those nechosim on the grounds of her shtar ksuba or on the grounds of the matana, because the ksuba, in effect, we say she was moichel on because of the matana, say the chachamim, and the matana itself gets overridden by the Baal Choyv.
Automatic.
That's yeah. Now the Ritva points out, if, for example, if we have reason to know that he did this davka in order to deprive her of uksuba, then we say that not. Then we're not going to say she's automatically moichel on uksuba. We're talking about where it was all done in good faith, and she has every reason to think that her husband was doing this because he genuinely likes her and wants to make sure that she has something. And now it turns out there was, unfortunately, a Baal Choyv. Then fine, we can say that she was moichel on uksuba, and it means, in other words, that all the property that exists up until now she can't collect from, and only Mikana Labba. But yeah, if he did it in order to try to play games over here, then we're not saying she's Mochel in the first place. So there is actually a different explanation among some Mefarshim that says that when we say Tikrak Subasa, it can actually mean literally that she can't collect her ksuba at all, even from Nechasim that she gets later on. Here the Rashbam is saying she's not completely forfeiting her ksuba. It would just mean that she can't collect from any of the Nechasim until now. But the Ramah explains, and the Meiri says maybe as a possibility, that it means she's moichel her ksuba completely, because when she's moichel on the shibur of nechosim, she's being moichel to whoever owns those nechosim. When she does the mechila, the nechosim themselves belong to her. Well, she's moichel to herself, basically. So now she's been moichel her ksuba completely, and it would mean, maybe according to that, it would mean that her husband would actually have to write her a new ksuba, because of course they can't stay married without a ksuba. Whereas according to the Rashbam, her ksuba itself is not forfeit. We just mean that she can't collect from any of the nechosim up until now.
Giving up doesn't mean giving extra paper, giving up just collecting the rights.
Right. Okay, anyway. So for Omer of Yehuda HaNachtoim, now Rabbi Yehuda HaNachtoim, some say he's one of the Asorah, in some of the lists of the Asorah Arugim Malchus, he's on it. There's different lists. There's some Chachamim where everybody agrees are part of the Asorah Arugim Malchus, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Chutz Observer Turgimon, a couple of others, but then there's some where there's different opinions, whether they're included in some lists they have Rabbi Yehuda HaNachtoim. Anyway, so he's... HaNachtoim means the baker, because the pastor, that was his profession, he was a baker. Anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNachtoim says, "Ma'aseh v'ira adova b'basa choisi kala." Such a thing happened involving my niece, a kala. Now, the word kala has a double meaning. It can mean a kala as in she's newly getting married, and a kala can also mean daughter-in-law. So the Rashbam understands it the first way. It means that this was my niece, who was also my daughter-in-law. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda HaNachtoim's son is marrying his cousin, which is perfectly allowed up Yalacha. So therefore, the Kala is Rabbi Yehuda's daughter-in-law as well as his niece. On the other hand, Rabbi Gershom takes Kala to just mean that she's newly married. The Kala in the sense, in other words, that she's just getting married now. Anyway, but you had something like this where the husband wrote out for her a shtar that says that he wrote all his nechassim, and then a Baal Choyv came to collect from property that he owned before that matana and after the ksuba. Now, usually, by the way, ksuba doesn't usually take effect until the nisuin. Maybe that's why Rashbam doesn't want to understand kala as in just an arusa, because then what's a ksuba doing over here? Rabbi Gershom, I guess, might answer that. Listen, we often find cases. There were cases we learned about in Masechta Ksubas and in other places where the ksuba is written and is meant to take effect even from the erusin. Anyway, so the case was brought to the Chachamim, v'omru, and they said, like the Chachamim of our Braisa, tikra ksubasa v'tamud amachnasa v'nimtsas karachas mikan amikan, that her ksuba, in effect, gets ripped up, again, not literally ripped up according to the Rashbam, but just that she can't collect from any nechasim until now. The matana remains, and therefore the result is, and the matana gets taken away by the Baal HaChovis, and therefore she ends up with nothing of any of the karaka until now.
But then why would someone do such a setup if they
know? So again, he didn't realize because she figured he's giving her a matana. She didn't know that eventually the Baal HaChovis are going to come and then take it. And he himself may not have known either that that's going to happen. He may have figured, okay, I know I have Chovis, eventually I'll pay him off. Whatever. The point is that, again, the Ritva is making the point. If we have reason, a Dayan would have to figure it out. It would have to be on a case-by-case basis, the Ritva says. If a Dayan has reason to figure in a particular case that he's doing it in order to play games and prevent her from collecting her ksuba, then no, we're not going to say that she was moichel. But otherwise, the Chacham was saying, for the fact that he's giving her his karka, she's willing to be moichel any claims to any other karka that he might have. So what do we see from all this braisa? The reason why she doesn't end up getting that karka is because there's a shtar choyv involved, and the baal choyv comes up taking and ends up coming and taking the karka. Implying if there hadn't been a shtar choyv, kanya, then she would be koina the property that he gave her. Now, which case are we talking about? Ilema b'shchibmera. If you're talking about that the husband, when he wrote this out, was a shchibmera, no. V'amet lo osar ala patrupas. On the previous omud, we said that in that case, he's not giving it to her outright. He's only making her an apatrupas. Evidently, then the Braisa must be talking about where he is healthy when he did this, and we're saying that he's actually giving it to her. So that would answer our question. Here, Rava is asking at the top of the Amud, the Bori Heyach, would we say there's a difference between a Shchivmera and a Bori? Apparently, based on this Braisa, yes. If he's a Shchivmera, we're saying he's only making her an apotropos because he wants his children to respect her after he's gone. But when he's a Bori and that consideration doesn't apply, it seems from this Braisa she's actually getting the karka. And she would have it if it weren't for the fact that there was a Baal Choyv involved.
Well, if he says Rush, then she wouldn't get it.
Not a matter of Yerusha. We're talking about he says a Loshana Matana.
Oh.
Even so, we said that if he says a Loshana Matana, right, nevertheless, he's still making her an apotropos. Now, again, we said there can be cases, there can be a difference between, the Rashbam learns there's a difference between saying it and writing it. If he says it, then it means he's giving it to her outright. If he's writing it, then it means more. He wants it to be mefursim. He wants it to be more well-known. And therefore, it means he's only making her an apotropos. The Rimi Gash had made the distinction between whether he says explicitly, I'm giving as a matana and not as an apotropos, versus where he didn't say that. Anyway, the point is that there definitely is a case, we learned before, that where he says, I'm giving you all my nechassim, we reinterpret what he says to mean, I'm not actually giving you all the nechassim, but rather I'm making you an apotropos. Well, it seems that over here by a body it's not so. Otherwise, there's nothing to talk about her forfeiting her ksuba, or forfeiting the ability to collect from anything else other than this, because to begin with, she's not actually the owner of it, just an apotropos. So that would show that, yes, by a body versus a shchiv mara, there's a difference. Shchiv mara, he writes, I'm giving you, it's really only making her an apotropos. A body, it would mean he's actually giving it to her as a matana. So the Gemara says not necessarily. You could actually say that the Braisa is talking about specifically that he was a shchiv mara. Because again, we had at the bottom of the previous Amud, we had a number of cases where you have, for example, let's say he says this kind of thing to a daughter among all his sons. So let's say he has a bunch of sons and he has daughters as well. And he says, one particular daughter, I'm giving you all the nechassim. Does that mean that he's giving it to her outright? Or does it mean that he's giving it to her enough? Or does it mean that he's making her an apotropos so her brothers will respect her? And we had several cases like that. Now, Rabbi Avira had said that in most of those cases, in fact, she would be koineh. So in the case of a daughter and several other cases over there, the case where you have his wife versus his brothers. So he has no children, for example. So he has, let's say, his brothers would be the ones to yarshin him. And instead, he's writing to his wife that I'm giving you the nechassim. Again, is he making her an apotropos so that his brothers will have respect for her? Or is it that he's giving it to her outright? So Rabbi Avira had said in many of those cases, you would actually say that that she is koine. And on the other hand, we had Ravina saying that no, in many of them, she's not koine, with a couple of exceptions. So again, referring that to over here, so Rabbi Avira muki lo bekulu, Rabbi Avira would say that the Braisa is talking about one of those cases where he says that she is in fact koine. For example, again, a daughter among the sons, or where the wife is an arush or is an arusa or a grusha or whatever. Where on the one hand, we could say that it means so you could say, does it mean he's giving it to her outright, or does it mean he wants them to honor her? You could argue that if she's only an arusa, he doesn't know her that well yet. Why would he care about her coven? It's more likely maybe that he's actually is more likely giving it to her outright. And the same thing with a grusha. Why would he care about her coven? Same thing. So Rabbi Avira would say that there are quite a few cases where he writes out such a thing, and we don't say it means an apotropos. We say that it means that he's giving her outright. Very well. So Rabbi Avira would say that our Braisa could be talking about one of those cases. And Ravina mukila b'ishtei arusa v'ishtei grusha. Ravina, who limits the scope of that din, would say fine, but at least it can apply to an arusa and a grusha. Now, in fact, in the earlier Gemara, we said that really the only nafkamina between Rabbi Avira and Ravina is really only about a daughter. According to Ravina, if he says to his daughter among the sons, I want you to have all the nechassim, he always writes it, whatever, then according to Ravina, she would actually only be an apotropos, and according to Rabbi Avira, she would actually own it outright. So that's the nafkamina between them. So now the Rashbam says that since we mentioned before, we use the Loshen, Rabbi Avira, Mishmei the Rav Omar, Bakulu Koni, Levar, he said, by all of them, she's Koine, with the exception of the following. So therefore, the Gemara uses the same expression over here, Bakulu, even though really the Gemara could have very simply said, they're both talking about where the wife is an arusa or a grusha, because as far as arusa and grusha, they both hold that she is koineh. So the Gemara could have said that, but because the expression before at the bottom of the previous Amud was Rabbi Avira says bekulu koni, except for, so therefore the Gemara uses a similar mode of expression over here. So you don't really have a proof from that Braisa whether it would work by a body, because you could say that the Braisa is talking about specific cases where, in fact, by a body or by a shchivna, she would be koina outright. The cases where we say that he's not making her an apotropos because not so much that he's concerned for her covered, and therefore that if he's giving her the nechassim, it means he's giving it to her outright.
It doesn't mean it's theory that it means you're giving up ksuba automatically.
So that's the thing. So what we're saying is, if we say that it's an actual matana, which is what the Braisa was implying, Rabbi Eliezer had said that no, we say that we override the matana. The whole point of the Matana was to improve her position, and now that it ends up making things worse for her, because it ends up that now she can't collect from the earlier Nechosim, because the Baal Chayv is going to take them, then we say that the Matana, that we ignore the Matana. Whereas the Chachamim said we can't ignore the Matana. The fact is, we can say that she was in effect Moichel on the Shibud of her Ksuba up until now, or even on the Ksuba altogether, according to the Ramah, and therefore that she winds up with no Ksuba and no Matana, and all it is they're going to need to write a new ksuba, and there's going to be a new shibud.
But this whole reason of having a ksuba was to protect her. So the chachamim,
right? So the chachamim are saying
in this case,
they're saying he gave her a matana and she accepted it. So we have to we can't just ignore the matana altogether. Again, according to the Rashbam, it doesn't mean that now she can't collect her ksuba at all. According to the Rashbam, all it means is she can't collect from these nechasim up until now. If he gets any later nechasim, then she can collect from those. Those are not under a shibud of the Baal Chayv. So here, in other words, they got married in Tishrei. He borrowed the money in Cheshvan, and that's when the shibud begins. In Kislev, he wrote her a shtar matan.
Right.
So according to the Rashbam, what we're saying is now she's forfeited any right to collect from any karka that he had in Tishrei or in Cheshvan. But any karka that he gets in that he gets up until the time of the loan, Cheshvan. But then any nechosin that he gets from Kislev onward, sure, she can still collect uksuba from them.
Something later on.
Yeah.
After he's
So had it not been for that, then she would be able to win the Baal Chayv. Had it not been for all of that, then when the Baal Chayv comes to collect, then she would say, yeah, but I have a prior shibud because I was married in Tishrei, and therefore I can take away from you Baal Chayv. Now, the Chachamim are saying that that's blocked because of this, but they're not saying, according to the Rashbam, that she's forfeited her ksuba altogether. Whereas according to the Ramah, yeah, it means that we can say she was moichel on her ksuba altogether because in effect she was moichel to herself because at the time of the Matana, she was still the owner of the property. The Baal Chayv hadn't taken it yet. And therefore, yeah, we'd have to write a new ksuba and she'd have a shibud from now on. The point of all of that being, though, that we thought that has to be talking about a bari, but no, we're saying even with a shivra, there are cases where he can say, I'm giving my nechosim to my wife, and it means he's actually giving, not just making an apotropos, namely by whether when his wife is an arusa or a grusha, and according to an arusa or a grusha, and according to Ravina, according to Rav Avira, rather, also when it's a daughter among his sons. So the braisa could be talking about one of those scenarios. Okay, so the Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Yosef ba Manyumi, Omer of Nachman, Halacha Tikra Ksubasa v'Tamid Amat Nasa. The Nimtzes Karachas Mikan Mikan. The Halacha Rav Nachman says is in fact like the Chachamim that yes, she can't collect her ksuba from those nechosim, even though her shibud came before the Baal Chayv, because again she was moichelit once he gave it to her as a matana, then therefore she's going to be able to she can't collect from those again. If she gets the nechosim after that, she'll collect from those. Now the Rashbam adds, why does Rav Nachman have to say the Halacha is like the Chachamim? Isn't it usually Halachah V'Rab Malacha K'Rabim? And in fact, with Rabbi Yezer, particularly, there are actually very few cases where the halacha is like him, because the Gemara explains in other places, Rabbi Eliezer was shamusi, which means either that he's a Talmud of Beis Shammai, or that he was put in Nidui by the Chachamim, and therefore it's very uncommon that the halacha is like him. Anyway, the Rashbam explains. Because further on, the Gemara is going to point out that there seems to be a contradiction between what Rav Nachman is going to say. The Gemara is going to talk about in the next couple of lines. He seems to be contradicting himself as far as another point that he says. And you might have thought to say the Gemara is going to give an answer, but maybe it's a weak answer. Maybe really he holds like Rabbi Eliezer. So we want to say that no, in fact, he does really hold like the Chachamim. So therefore, that's why he had to stress the halacha is like a Chachamim. Don't misunderstand me based on my other statement and think that I actually hold like Rabbi Eliezer in this case. No, I hold like the Chachamim. Okay, well, that's the question. Lememra delay also Rav Nachman Bosa Umdana. So are you telling me Rav Nachman does not follow the concept of Umdana, that when we have that here he said something and we should say Me'oimed Adas, we can say we can assume that she wouldn't want to be Moichel Hoshibur just because her husband gave her a present? V'atanya. But we learn in a braisa, which we're going to discuss this point more extensively in the next parak, Be'ez Hashem, in a couple of weeks. Suppose a man's son went overseas, v'shamash, and let's say it was his only son, v'shamash ames b'noi, he heard reports that his son had died. So he figured, in that case, I have no yodish. I don't want my brothers or my uncles or however, wherever it's going to be in the tree over there, as we learned earlier in the parak. I don't want them to get it. So he goes and writes out a shtar matana, giving all of his nechosim to somebody else. And then his son comes back. So what do we do? Matnase matana. So the Tanakama of the Braisa says his matana is a matana. Doesn't matter if he had said explicitly, I'm giving this matana because as far as I know, my son is dead, then that would be one thing. But he didn't say, so he said, I'm giving a matana. Well, then it's a matana. Reb Shimon Menasya Omer, but Reb Shimon Menasya says ain matnasa matana. No, the matana is not a matana. Ilu hoyedeh shebnoi kayam. Had he known that his son is alive, loy kosman, then he wouldn't have written out such a shtar, giving it to somebody else. So now we're going to discuss this point in more detail in a couple of weeks, Be'ez Hashem. But right now, all we need to know for our purpose is v'omer Reb Nachman halacha Reb Shimon Menasya. That Reb Nachman says that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Menasya, which means that we do go according to Umdana, which means, in other words, we have something where he said explicitly, I'm giving as a matana, but now we override that based on our Umdana Das, based on our evaluation, that he wouldn't have meant to do that if he knows his son was alive. So therefore, so Reb Nachman does follow Umdana, whereas in our case over here, when Reb Nachman is saying that you go according to the Chachamim, means we're not following Umdana. If we followed Umdana, we'd want to go according to Reb Eliezer and say she wouldn't have wanted to be loichel the ability to collect her ksuba from any property that's available just because her husband gave her a matana of his property. So the answer is, so again, that's the Rashbam had said, that's why Reb Nachman had needed to say in the Machlokas Reb Eliezer and the Chachamim, why he needed to say the Halacha was like the Chachamim. Otherwise, we would answer very simply, okay, Reb Nachman holds like Reb Eliezer, and therefore Umdana works over there and it works over here. But the answer is that no, shiny hossam, because it's different in the case with the wife, the nichala, she would actually prefer the tipokala kala, the kasvinu nihala, the hanu nechasim. She likes the idea that there was a coil going out that he wrote her all his nechasim.
Remarry easier.
It can be because she can remarry easier, but whatever. The point is that shows that she's important to her husband, shows that her husband really appreciates her, and because of that, she's willing to be moichel the shibud that she had for the ksuba up until now. So she's saying, you know what, even if a Baal Choyv comes, up until now, I have that nachas ruach, that my husband made me feel good about it, and therefore I'm willing to override my shibud. Okay, so the bottom line is, in other words, so we haven't really proven one way or the other whether a bari is able to do the same kind of thing when he gives the property in the cases where we say where a shivra wouldn't be koine, it would be only making an apotropos. Would that apply to a bari as well? So it's not clear from the maskana of the Gemara whether in fact by a bari the same din would apply, and then therefore we say because of the suffix, basically she's only an apotropos. I'm oitzim chaver levaraya. The Gemara says Tanan Hossam. Now,
all this is just by a few words. If you don't write, then you make a big mess.
So you know what? Lahavdil. This is why lawyers, write and make sure to dot every I and cross every T, and why they write things at such great length. You know, sometimes you look at some of these legal papers and you wonder why on earth do they have to go on with such arichos. You know, the famous joke. You know, you've seen legal size paper, like when you're signing documents for a house or whatever, and they're 14 inch long, the papers, and as opposed to regular printer paper is 11 inches. So the joke goes, because it takes lawyers 14 inches to say what normal people can say in 11. But there is a certain logic behind it, as we see from the Gemara over here, that you don't say something, then you have to construe it, and you have to assume, then you start having arguments what exactly it meant. You spell out everything down to the last letter, then you have less room for arguments. Yeah.
So the Rebbe also, what? Things weren't written down by Rebbe also.
I've mentioned before, by the way, something that the Sneh says in his introduction to the Prisha. He wrote Prisha and Drisha on the Torah, and he wrote Sma and Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yeshua Falek, his name was. He was the grandfather of the Pnei Yeshua, and he was an important Rav in his own time. Anyway, he writes, I've mentioned this before, he writes in his Akdama that one reason why Torah Shebaal Peh was not meant to be written in the first place is because anytime you write down something, you can't possibly include all the details. There's always going to be some inherent uncertainty where then later generations are going to argue what exactly it meant. As opposed to, you have, when it's Baal Peh, you're in front of the Rebbe, and if you have any question about it, you're going to ask him, and then everything will become clear. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara says, so now again, the reason why we brought this whole thing in was because of Rava's question, Bebori Heach. So now the Gemara is going to bring another example of a din which applies to a Shrivmara, and we're going to ask again whether it applies to a Bori as well, which is again why the Gemara is doing these series of halachas over here. Tnan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Peya, of all places. Now, in Masechta, why we have Dinim Mominus in Masechta Peya, it's one of those kinds of things. You know, Mishnah, the Mishnahis themselves were originally by heart. So we have many times when you have a Mishnah that talks about a certain topic, then you'll have digress to talk about other ones that are similar, that where also it mentions that point. You have famously, for example, in Masechta Megillah, you have Ein Bein, Odorishin, Odorasheni, except for whatever. And therefore, you have a whole series of Mishnahis after it that begin Ein Bein, this and that, which have nothing to do with Masechta Megillah per se, but it's just once you have one, then you have a bunch of others in the same vein. There's a lot of places in Mishnayos like that. So here, in Masechta Peah, it mentions a machloikus. How much land does a person have to be chayiv in Peah? And Rabbi Akiva says, kol shehu, even if he has the tiniest amount of land, he's chayiv in Peah, and therefore that causes the Mishnah to digress over there to talk about a number of other dinim that apply to karka kol shehu. So now, in that connection, the you have as follows: Hakosiv Nechosiv Labanav. A person wrote out a shtar that he's giving that he's giving his nechosim to his children. Later on, we'll learn tomorrow about Hashem. The Gemara is going to discuss: are we talking about where he gave all his nechosim, or even only part of them? Right now, we're not addressing that point yet. Anyway, he wrote the nechosim to his sons, Vekosiv LeIshtei Karka Kol Shehu, and he wrote it. He wrote in that shtar also that he's giving his wife any amount of karka. Now he's not clarifying: is he meaning that to pay off her ksuba, which would mean it wouldn't pay off her whole ksuba, but it would pay off part of it, or would it mean that he's giving it to her as a separate matana, unrelated to her ksuba at all? The part that he gives his sons, there's no question, is under the shibud for her ksuba. But the question is, now that he's giving her some land, does that mean that he's meaning that to at least partially pay off her ksuba, or does it mean he's giving it to her as an unrelated matana? So ibda ksubasa. So the Mishnah says she's lost her ksuba. Again, not literally lost, but in other words, she's lost the ability to collect from these nechosin. So she won't be able to collect from the ones that he gave his sons, because again, once he gave her kauka kol shehu, as the Gemara is going to explain, then she has a nachas ruach from it, and therefore she's willing that the matana to the children should be irrevocable, and that she shouldn't be able to override that and collect uksuba. Well, that's the question. Mishum de kosav la karka kol shehu ibda ksubasa. So what do you mean? Just because he gave her a small amount of karka, would we say that she's moichel uksuba completely and she can't collect it at all? So Omar Rab mizak lahen al yoda. So Rav says what we're talking about is where he's mizake to them through her. So for example, you need for example a kinyan sudr in order to make the matana irrevocable. So let's say, for example, she gave her very own sudr to do the kinyan with. Now, how do you do kinyan sudr? You use kalev shokoina. You use a sudr that belongs to the one who's acquiring the rights. Meaning, in other words, for example, when it comes to mechiras chametz, the rav is acquiring the rights to your chametz. He's giving you his sudr, and with that, the kinyan sudr takes effect. And then you lift it up and it becomes yours momentarily, and with he's makna that to you, and with that and with that he's koina your chametz. The same way over here, in other words, so she's providing the sudr that's being used for the kinyan to the sons. So therefore it means she's putting in so much effort into that they should actually have a matana that should actually fully take effect. And he gave her karka kol shehu, and she didn't say, wait a second, that's karka kol shehu, what about the rest of my ksuba? So therefore, implicitly, we can say that it means that she's willing that they should have that matana completely, and not that she should be able to take away her ksuba from it. So Rav says that would be the case.
Still has a ksuba.
In other words, she still has a ksuba, and she can still collect from any property that he gets later on. But in other words, these two factors, the fact that she herself provided the sudr for them to be koina with, and the fact that, remember, it has to be Caleb Shokoina, which means, in effect, she's saying, I'm giving my sudr to those children so that they can do a kinyan with it. And she's willing to accept the karka kol shahu without protesting. Wait a second, this is only kol shahu. That means, taking those two factors, taken together, that Rav says is enough for us to say that it means she's moichel on the shibur that she had on these nechosim up until now, and she's willing that the children should just have them outright. And fine, as far as my ksuba, I'll collect from other nechosim that my husband will get later on.
Most don't get chosim later on after they die.
Well, we're talking about whether that's the question. We're going to deal with whether this is by body. Right now, we're talking about, right, we have to figure out, that's the reason, again, the reason the Gemara is bringing this in is because we're going to discuss shkrib minah versus body. But we'll get to that. Anyway, Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says you don't even need that she provided the sudr. He's dividing up the property in her presence, where he writes out the nechosim to his sons. He writes out that my sons are going to get my nechosim, and she doesn't say anything. So once he also wrote karka kol shahu, shtika kaida. If he hadn't given her anything, then we would say that she's being quiet and she's not protesting, because the Gemara calls it elsewhere, nachas ruach hasisi labayli, that I'm just doing it, I don't want to start a fight with my husband. But once he's giving her karka kol shahu, then she should say, wait a second, what are you talking about kol shahu? It should be more than that to pay off my whole ksuba. If she's not, then Shmuel says that's the case. It's all being done in her presence. And he's giving her karka kol shahu. So therefore, now there's no reason to say that she's being quiet just because nachas ruach hasisi labayli must be that she's being quiet because she's actually accepting those terms and saying, fine, I'm willing to accept that karka kol shahu as partial payment of my ksuba. And as far as the rest of my ksuba, eventually when my husband gets more nechosim, then I'll collect from those.
This is her future.
Okay, but nevertheless, Reb Yosi, Reb Chanina Omar, and Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina gives a third explanation. Actually, by the way, as far as the previous one, as far as Rav's explanation, because she's providing the sudr, so the Ritva explains another point, that the fact that she's providing the sudr, that itself is a covered for her. It makes it look as though the whole thing was her idea. So therefore, so that kind of nachas ruach, then,
This sort of thing where when we're done with someone from us, why don't we just say, we should give back to Rav and say, now this is back to yours again?
We do. After we're done, we don't keep the Rav's garret all.
I know we're giving it back to him, but we're not saying anything. It's officially yours now.
We don't need to. Once you give it back to him, obviously you're giving it back to him for him to keep. You don't need to actually explicitly be makneh it back to him. So that point, by the way, we learned in Bava Metzia is the subject of machlokas, whether you use Caleb Shokoino or Caleb Shomakna. It was based on how we understand the psukim in Megillas Rus, where we have the story of Boaz and the Goyal with acquiring the rights to marry Rus and be Goyal the fields. So Vayishleif Nala, it says he took off his shoe or his glove. So who does that apply to? Does it mean Boaz took off his shoe and handed it to the Goyal, or the other way around? The halacha is it means that the Goyal took off his shoe and handed it to Boaz. The other way around. Boaz is the koiner. He's the one acquiring the rights. So Boaz took off his shoe and handed it to the Goyal, and in return, the Goyal transferred him the rights to that he would have otherwise had to acquire those fields that had been sold by the family and to marry Rus.
So it was not only Rus, it was the field.
The actual thing under discussion over there was two things. There were fields that Ali Melech and his family had to sell because they were poor, and now they should stay in the family. The pasuk says the Goyal, the nearest relative, should come and redeem them so they stay in the family. So therefore, Boaz first says to the Goyal, you know, we have to deal something with all those fields so they don't end up getting transferred out of the family. Fine, they're going to return to the original person in Yovel, but still it's a bazillion to the family that should happen. And then Goyal says, fine. And then Boaz tells him, you should know, along with that, you also have to marry Rus. It's a package deal. And then the guy says, no, I don't want to do that. And so therefore he transfers all the rights to Boaz.
Okay. But he was
a closer relative.
But when he went out when he left, he was a rich man.
He got poor over the years in Moab. Yeah,
but he could send a shliach.
No, he sold his field. Yeah, he sold and sent a shliach to sell his field. Okay. Anyway. Returning to the Gemara. So again, so we have Rav says, in order for her to be moichel, means you have to have a very strong thing, a very strong demonstration that she's willing to go along with it. She provided the actual sudder and she accepted that karka culture. And then by providing the sudder, either again, it shows as the Rashbam says that she's very concerned that they should actually get their part, or as the Ritva says, it makes it look as though the whole thing was her idea. And therefore, with that nachas ruach, then she's willing to be moichel. Shmuel is more meichel. Shmuel says that's not really necessary. Even she doesn't provide the sudder, but she was there at the time and saw what was going on and didn't protest, then that itself is enough reason to say that she's moichel on her sheep.
But we don't know in the past that when she just wants to make it happen, really she doesn't want to lose.
Again, that's when, if she didn't say anything, if he didn't give her anything at all, you could say nachas ruach hasisa labayli. But now that he's giving her something, then she should have the ability to say, wait, what do you mean something? It should be more. It should be to pay off my ksuba. And she doesn't. Therefore, Shmuel says that's reason enough to say that she's moichel on the sheep.
So I understand the $100 worth of akaka she's getting now, that she cannot collect. But what's about the other 900? That shouldn't be given.
Again, this means that she's saying, I'm willing to accept right now this $100 worth of karka, which will be a partial payment towards my ksuba. The rest of it, I'm not worried about right now. I'll worry about it later. Eventually, you'll get more nechassim or something. Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina says, you don't even need that. Even if she wasn't present at the time, but oimala tli karka zubik subasif, where he tells her, take this karka, and he writes out the karka, and he says, take this karka for your ksuba. If she doesn't protest at the time, then it means she's moichel or shibud on the rest of the karka. So each one of them, Shmuel is being more meikel than Rav, and saying, even when she didn't provide the sudder, still you can have a case, which is moichel, and Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina is going beyond Shmuel, and saying, even if she wasn't there, the very fact that he wrote tli karka zubik subasif, and she didn't protest, is reason enough to say that she's moichel on her shibun. Because this is one of those examples, says Rabbi Yosi b'Chanina, or actually it really applies to all three opinions. This is one of the things where we say that the ksuba, there's a kula in it. There's a number of things we find where the chachamim are meikel as far as a ksuba, because after all, we have the concept the Gemara mentions in various places, even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married, and she's willing to put up with a lot for it. So therefore, in other words, so we figure out, therefore, she's willing to, so a lot of times she'll be willing to accept less than objectively. A person might say, why are you satisfied with so little? She's going to say, I'll be married. But the point is, therefore, the ksuba as a whole, we have many kulas in it. That's why, for example, she can collect only from ziburis. That's why, for example, so now, on the other hand, a Baal Choyv actually did a favor to the guy. He lent him money. He didn't have to. When this husband came to borrow money from the Baal Choyv could have very well told him, I'm sorry, I don't have money to lend you, or I don't want to lend you, or whatever. And he did him a favor and lent him money. Right. Therefore, we should try to prefer the claim of the Baal Choyv over the woman who, after all, didn't... She got married, but she would have been willing to anyway. It benefits her more than it does him. So therefore, so we have various examples in halacha where we say mikulei ksuba. We say there were various aspects of a ksuba where we're mekel relative to other balei chovos, and this would be an example of it. So you have three different opinions what it takes when he's writing out karka kolshu ibduk subasa. You have three opinions what it would take for that mechila to be effective. Does it mean that she had to actually be involved in the kinyan? Does it mean that she was there at the time? Or does it mean even if she wasn't there at the time? So now, Tznan, and now we learn in the continuation of that Mishnah in Peah, Rabbi Yosi Omer, im kibla aleha. Rabbi Yosi says if she accepted on herself, meaning that she's moichel, the shibud, afal pishalei kosavla, even though he didn't write her anything, he didn't say that I'm giving her any, that I'm giving her any karka at all, ibda ksubasa, then also she forfeits the shibud of her ksuba. So in other words, you could have that he's writing out. So in other words, again, the first part of the Mishnah had described where he's writing out a document saying, I'm giving my nechassim to my children, and then I'm giving you karka kol shehu. Rabbi Yosi says you don't even need the karka kol shehu. If he's just saying, I'm giving it all to my children, and he doesn't say anything, then also ibduk subasa. Well, the Gemara says, Miklal de Tanakama Sova, Ksiva the Kabbalah boy. It comes out then that the Tanakama apparently requires
writing and
that it has to be written, and it has to be that she and it has to be that she accepts it. Because otherwise, what is Rabbi Yossi saying? Otherwise, Rabbi Yossi should be saying that even if he wrote out for her, Loi Ibdik Subasa unless Kibla. So it sounds like the Tanakama requires both, and Rabbi Yossi is saying that just writing is enough. So now the question then is Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi and Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina are all saying that just the very even she doesn't say anything, then it's enough. But it sounds like from the Mishnah, it sounds like by being medayek from Rabbi Yossi, it seems like the Tanakama would require her to actually say explicitly, I am Merchel on my Shibud. So then what are Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina respectively saying that there can be cases where she's Merchel without saying so, when we would infer from the Mishnah that she actually has to say, I'm Merchel on my, according to the Tanakama, that she actually has to say, I'm Merchel on my Shibud in order for her to actually be Merchel on it.
Yes,
And in other words, if not for that, then we could just say Nachas Ruach Hasisu Labayli. Would mean, in other words, that means she's not moichel on anything. She's not moichel. I just didn't want to start an argument with my husband. Yeah. Tosfos also discusses the point. Tosfos also discusses the point that how do you know? Maybe the Tanakama would say it's enough to write it. And Rabbi Yossi would say it's enough to accept it. In other words, Rabbi Yossi would say, I don't need the writing, but I do need the accepting. But then why would Rabbi Yossi be using the word afalpi? So it implies that Tanakama is saying you need two factors, ksiva and kabbalah, and Rabbi Yossi is saying ksiva by, and Rabbi Yossi is saying kabbalah by itself is enough, that she accepted this even if it wasn't written. But the question is, in other words, that all three Amiroyim said that that it doesn't require that she's actually Makabel, just the fact that the Matana was given and she was involved in the Kinyan according to Rav, or she was there according to Shmuel, or just the fact that the document was written out according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina is enough for her to be Moichel on her Shibud. But it comes out Rabbi Yossi is saying that just Kibla is enough, implying the Tanakama is requiring Ksiva and Kabbalah. Well, then it contradicts all three of those Amiroyim. You're going to answer that maybe the entire Braisa is, maybe you're going to say maybe that entire Mishnah, rather, in Peah is like Rabbi Yossi. So in other words, the Reisha would be saying that it's enough to write it, and Rabbi Yossi would be saying, you know what, actually, it's not enough. It's not necessary to write it. It would also work instead if there was Kabbalah. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi would be saying, so Rabbi Yossi would be saying, so he'd be saying like this, first I told you that if he writes it, now I'm telling you a different din, instead of writing, there could be that she's Makabel. The problem with understanding it that way, Vatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Om Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai. Rabbi Yehuda says, when do we say this din? Rabbi Yehuda is coming to explain the Tanakama. When do we say that if he wrote her kauka kolshu, then she loses her shibud on the ksuba? So Rabbi Yehuda explains, Shahosasham, when she was there, the kibla aleha, and she accepted on herself that she's willing to accept this. You're giving me kauka kolshu, and you're giving everything else to my sons, to your sons, then fine. Because how would you have a person who's going to have his own mammon taken away from him and not protest? So therefore, but if she was there and she didn't actually accept it on herself, she was just quiet. Or kibla, where then we could say, nachasu achasisi labayli, I didn't want to start an argument. Or Rabbi Yehuda says, kibla alev lehoisa sham, or if she accepted on herself, but she wasn't there, then also she could say, nachasu achasisi labayli, because she wasn't there at the time. And therefore she's saying, fine, you know, I didn't want to, I did accept it, but I wasn't actually there to see it happen. So therefore, So either way, so Rabbi Yehuda would say, Loi Ibdik Subasa. Either way, then she's not forfeiting the shibud on her ksuba. So the point is, now Rabbi Yehuda is saying Emasai, or by different gear says, by Medvarim Amurim, which means that he's clarifying what the Tanakama says. It means that the Tanakama actually does require ksiva and kabbalah, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that, and Rabbi Yehuda is clarifying that if she was there and not Kibla or Kibla and she wasn't there, lo ibrik sabasa tiyuv to dekulu. Well, therefore, then this Mishnah and the Braisa with it is a contradiction to all three of the Amoraim that we said before. All three of them who were saying there are some conditions under which we say that she's moichel on her, that she's moichel on it when she was involved in the kinyan or when she was there. Or when it was written or whatever, it comes out that now we've schlugged up all three of them. And the Gemara says, Tiyuvda, you're right, it's a contradiction. Wow. So only if she says beferush am moichel, then she's moichel. Otherwise, she can always say nachas ruach hasisi
l'bayli.
That's better. Yeah.
I remember from the Gemara, we were learning back and forth this from the Gemara.
Yeah. So now one thing that Ashbam points out over here. Now all of this was that we were discussing before what Rab Nachman says, that Rab Nachman had said that you have the case where he gave her a gift, and meanwhile there's Baal Chovas, then we say that Reb Nachman had passed him like the Chachamim that nimtzes karachas mikana, because again the fact that she receives a matana means she's giving up oshibud to those nechosim, and therefore the Baal Chov ends up coming and taking those and then ends up coming and taking that. The Rashbam brings over here from Rashi, from a tshuva of Rashi. So yeah, I guess actually let's learn the next line and then we'll talk about. Omale Rova Rav Nachman. So Rova asked Rav Nachman, listen, Rav Hoshmul Rav Yosef Rav Chanina. We have three opinions of Amiroyim so far, what the story is as far as when he writes a matana to his sons and he gives her a piece of karka with it. Mar Maisvirle, what about you, Rebbe? What do you hold about it? So Rav Nachman answers, Shani Omer, I would say that in that kind of case, even if she didn't say anything, Kivin Shasah Shutaf Bein Habanim, once he made her a partner among his children, Ibdak Subasa, then that alone, that Chashivos, that he's making her equal to his children, then she's Moichel the Shibud until now. So we don't need, in other words, so it means that now we don't need everything that we said before, that we just said that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosef and Chanina are giving various circumstances where we said that she would or wouldn't be moichel on her ksuba. Now we don't really need all of that. Just the fact that it was written, if we go according to Rabbi Yossi, so Rashbam explains that Rav Nachman would be going according to Rabbi Yossi, either ksiva or kabbalah is enough. And Rav Nachman says the reason is because of the chashivos that he's making her equal to his children. Then the Rashbam brings that Rashi explains like this. Rav Nachman is actually following Shmuel. We do find that Rav Nachman was a Talmud of Shmuel. So he's following Shmuel's opinion. We schlugged up Shmuel. That was because that was according to the Tanakhama. But Shmuel can be holding according to Rabbi Yossi that either Ksiva or Kabbalah is enough. And therefore Shmuel is saying that if she's Makabal on herself, that she was there and she didn't protest, then therefore that's good enough. And Rav Nachman would be following the same opinion. So there's two ways of understanding what Rav Nachman is saying. Either Rav Nachman is saying that just writing it out alone is enough, or the very fact that he made a shutaf bein habanim, which means not like the various opinions of Amoraim that we said that she needs to somehow accept it, but rather we would say that writing out itself is enough. Or we would say that Rav Nachman is specifically going according to Shmuel and saying who in turn goes according to Rav Yossi. So Itmar Nami, it's said also that the Amoraim had a discussion about that. Omer Rav Yosef Amanyumi, Omer Rav Nachman, Kivin Shasah Shutaf Ein Habanim, the very fact that he made her a partner among his other children, Ibduk Subasa, means that she loses the right to the Shibud of Uksuba. The very fact that he made her a Shutaf among the children is reason enough. So now, and again, we have two ways of understanding what Rav Nachman means by that. So now that we established all of that, Bori Rava b'Bori Heyach. So now Rava has the question, what about a Bori? Again, given the point before, there can be a difference between a shivra versus a body. So when he's doing it as a body and he makes a shut of fein abonim, as Reb Nachman had said, would the same din apply? Where you could say that by shivra you would say because she knows he's not going to have any more nechosim and he's going to die, he's not going to get any more nechosim. So therefore, if she didn't protest at the time, it means she's willing to forego her shibud altogether because otherwise she should have said something. Well, by a body. By a body, maybe not. He may well buy more nechosim over the years. So why should I bother now? Why should I start an argument now when I'll see what happens over the years? Or maybe not. So what do we say? By a shchimra, she knows he's not going to have any more property. So if he's giving her karka kolshahu and he's not, or shutafein abonim, whatever he's making her partner among these other children, and she's not protesting and saying, wait a minute, but you're going to die soon, you're not going to have any more nechosim, how am I going to collect the rest of my ksuba? Then it means she's moichel on that shibud, and it means she's not worried about that money from the ksuba for whatever reason. But by a body, that wouldn't apply, because by a body, she may well think, you know what, he has many more years to acquire property. Alva body savra hodrakoni, so by a body, she may think that he may yet buy more karka. Oduma hashta mia lesle, or the fact is, right now, he doesn't have anything else, and she doesn't know whether in the future he might buy more. So therefore, on the face of it, she should be moicha, and if she wasn't moicha, then she's moicha on her shibud. So to be sure that Ashbam says, and there's no question, if he gets more nechosim later on, he will be able to collect from them. The question is, again, as far as the nechosim, as far as the shibud on the nechosim that he gave his children. Now then the Rashbam brings a different explanation, which is actually the explanation of the Rimigash, that the question is whether she'd be able to collect from the chosim later on, or has she forfeited her ksuba entirely. But the Rashbam says that's a mistake. That's not what the Gemara means. And he says, because the Loshen of the Gemara doesn't really fit with that. Anyway, the Gemara says teku, so we don't really have an answer. So later on, the Gemara is going to bring something from Rav Kahana in this connection on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, and the Rashbam points out, if that was as far as whether she can collect later on, if that was the subject under discussion over here, then the Rashbam says, instead of saying teku, the Gemara should have then continued something which is obvious to Rav Kahana was questioned by Rava, and he left it as teku. But the fact that the Gemara didn't do that says that Rashbam implies that they're actually two separate things. So the Gemara says, "Hahuda Amalahu." There was a man who was a shchivra. He had two daughters and no sons. So he said, "Paugalibras." He said, "Half of my nechosim should go to one daughter. The other half should go to the other daughter. Utlosil itas beperi, and one third should go to my wife as far as the peiros. So as far as the peiros, one third of them is going to go to my wife and." And the karka itself is going to go to my two daughters. So the question is, what is that? What's the din is for? How do we apply this as far as the din of the shibud for huksuba? So Iklar Rav Nachman l'sura. So Rav Nachman visited sura ulagabe Rav Chista. He went to visit Rav Chista, who lived there. Or it can mean the other way around. Rav Chista came to visit him, whatever. Anyway, Omale, so Rav Chista asks him, Ki hai gavnamai, what would be the din in this case? He didn't make a shutaf bein abonis, like in the previous case. He didn't say, I'm giving out three parts and one part goes to her and one part to each of the daughters, where then we could say she's moichel on her shibur. Here he's only giving her peiros. So therefore... So maybe she doesn't own any of the karka itself. So maybe she would be entitled to take the karka to pay her ksuba. So Rav Nachman tells him, Hochi Omar Shmuel, this is what Shmuel said, Afilu lehikno la'ela dekel echad leperoisav, even if he was only makna her one tree, as far as its peiros, where she's going to just have the peiros, as long as the tree exists, ibdu ksubasa, then she still forfeits her shibur on the ksuba, because at least she does have a certain ownership of the karka. So she has the right to the peiros of this tree, as long as it's growing, which means therefore that... So therefore, so she owns a, so she own in effect, she owns the tree to a certain extent, and therefore that's considered like she owns karka, and therefore we have the same din. He made her a shutter as far as the karka, and therefore it means she was moichel on her shibur up until now. Omale, but Rav Chista says, is that really the same thing? Emor de Omar Shmuel Hossam. You know, you could say Shmuel is saying over there, the akne la gufa de ara. Here he's he's makna her something of the goof of the land. Haka peru, but over here we're not even talking about peris that are attached to the ground. We're talking about detached peris that he gave her. So it's not the same thing at all. Amalei said, Nachman says, oh, metaltli kahamas. Ah, you're talking about a case involving where he's giving her metaltlin. That's different. Metaltli vada like kahamina. It's true. I'm not talking about where he gave her only metaltlin. I thought you were asking about a case where the dates are still where the fruit is still on the tree. So then I would say that's Shmuel's din. But you're right. If it was detached fruit, then that would be different. Then yes, she hasn't forfeited her shibud on the karka at all, and she would be able to and she would be able to collect from that karka. Then we would also say though that it means we would say the fruit counts towards the value of uksuva, and then she would get karka to pay off the rest. The ritva explains a little bit differently. That the peiros were actually mechuber, but Rav Nachman had figured they're still growing and they still need to be attached to the karka. And Rav Chista is clarifying to him that no, we're talking about the scenario we're talking about over here. They are still on the tree, but they're not. They don't need the tree anymore. They could be harvested any time, and therefore Rav Nachman says you're right. Then those would be considered like metaltlin. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more cases like this.